Many of you have been asking me to share more about the trip to Israel. So this past week, we had a debrief at our shul in Lower Merion. Most of the members of the group joined, but unfortunately, I only started to record it after our second speaker. So I will fill in the first activity and then you'll hear the live version after that. Have in mind, I used my phone to record this, and let me catch you up. Our rabbi and the leader of the trip is Rabbi Avraham Schmidman. He introduced the event, and we played a video that I put together using the pictures and some of the videos over the trip, and you'll hear some of the speakers referencing the video that we all watched at the beginning of the event.
Betty Ann was the one who talked about the first guest, and because I didn't record her, I asked her if she'd be willing to re-record her experience. So she did that, and I'll pop it in right here.
I'd like to talk about Ariella, who was the first person that we heard from on the mission. She was incredibly impactful. I didn't expect the first person we would hear from would be quite so impactful. She was, is a 19-year-old going on 20 young woman who was part of the IDF as an observer. Her job was to look at 7 meters of the Gaza border. As she told us, she knew every inch, every rock, every bit of barbed wire. So she, when there was something unusual, she knew. And she did see things that were unusual. Last April, she had seen terrorists dressed up as soldiers timing each other running to the border. She reported that, and they were not taking it seriously. At 3 o'clock in the morning on October 7th, she saw a guy with a green ribbon around his eyes. He kept pointing at certain points. And 4 hours later, she told us that's exactly where they crossed. She lost 42 friends on October 7th. She had one of them die in her arms. She was incredibly calm and possessed when she was telling us this story. I'm sure that this trauma has been absolutely horrific for her. She did go back. She has gone back to the IDF after all of this. She is back on the Gaza border. She has been going around doing a presentation that she does 2 or 3 times a week, for 1 week off and then 3 weeks on as part of her IDF responsibilities. She was just incredibly impactful in the way she told her story, in what her story was. But what I came away from it with was something that really, I think, encapsulates the entire mission. And that is, here she had trauma and sadness that no person, let alone a person of 19 years or 20 years, should have to deal with. But she had strength, she had resiliency, and most importantly, she has hope. She told us when we talked to her afterwards that she expects to be she expects to be Prime Minister of Israel in 10 years. This is the same young woman who also said it is her responsibility now that she has to live for 42 other people. She wanted us to know her friends as they were, as they lived, not as they died. She was an incredibly impactful speaker, as I said, and I was so taken with that combination of trauma and sadness, resiliency, strength, and hope.
The next day, we started out going to an army base in the south where we got to see a place that was just put together in days. Intelligence sitting in tents with light bulbs and extension cords, literally controlling things in Gaza and having open communication with the soldiers on base. We also got to see the shul that was built, a little tent with a little Aron Kodesh in case they had to evacuate. They needed a small Sefer Torah. They also had to fill in. And there was a little rack right in front of the Aron. Rabbi Leader told us that that was for the Kohanim. So lots of improvisation and everything miniature, rustic. We also got to go behind the gates and get a tour of the place where they process the fallen soldiers. And I think I shared about that specific activity as well. The commander of that unit shared that all the soldiers in that unit are volunteers, and no one on the base knows what happens behind these gates. The commander shared with us the four methods of identification. They use facial recognition, fingerprints, DNA, and dental records. And two is enough to identify, the two out of four. He also told us how they ask Mechila from the fallen. We said a Kel Malei Rachamim at the end before leaving. So those were the two activities. And now we'll dive into the next activity and you'll get the live version. So here we go.
The southernmost city in Israel that was not evacuated. We went to Da'at Mikvah, the grave of the Baba Sali, and then again, we had two experiences which I will allow Adina to talk about.
It was very moving to be at the keber of the Baba Sali. Certainly the way the people in Netivot feel, there is certainly a sentiment that the Baba Sali protected that city because the terrorists did not come into Netivot. We davened mincha there. There's a lot of hustle and bustle. This was also his yard site. It was a significant number the other week. And so the facility was a lot of shipusim, renovations done, and a lot of energy around the Baba Sali's kever. We went from there to a space, kind of a makeshift food packing space. You may have seen it on the video. It's they're taking secondhand or Class B produce, packing it up and distributing it. The fellow who started this operation did so when he was 15 years old. He's now probably about 45.
So he's been 20 years.
28 years. Very earnest. He is also a Rebbe in Sderot, a lower grade school Rebbe. It was very, very moving to see him become very emotional describing his students who are dispersed and who he's trying to maintain a connection with. And they're asking him very, very hard questions. When will we come back? How will we know we're safe? Rebbe, why did this happen? And he was very emotional speaking to us about it. It was good to get our hands dirty, literally and figuratively, packing pomelos and other fruits and vegetables, for knowing that we were doing something very impactful in a very practical way. From there, we got on the bus, and my husband and I then delivered toys to a teacher and her students. We didn't empty the bus because it was a lot of getting on and off. So we just ran out and met this teacher with these girls. But what was cute was the teacher said in Hebrew, does anyone know where Philadelphia is? And so one of the girls says, Gvina. So she says, no, Midina. And the little girl goes, lo. Give me not.
Cheese.
Cream cheese, right. Philadelphia cream cheese. So that was actually quite cute. And you can right away see who's the smart aleck in the class. The kids lined up and they were very excited. You can just imagine, when you bring toys and they don't all look the same, what happens when you start to distribute them. And, but the teacher, to her credit, was really so in command of the group. Despite, a little bit of chaos. And for me, what was very poignant was I gave her a hug. And, that's something, it doesn't cost anything, but, a real hug goes a long way. And the hug that she gave me back, and she started to get, again, this is a teacher who's really holding it together and very much in control. And when we hugged, she got very emotional, and it's hard. It's really hard, and trying to be there. And because they haven't been evacuated, Netivot as a city feels somewhat neglected because they haven't gotten the attention. Again, I don't mean that in a trite way, but they're not getting the attention of those people who've been displaced, or cities that have been evacuated. people sort of felt like, okay, they're okay, because they're in place, but they're really not okay. And so that extra TLC, bring the toys for the kids, just really was very, very, very meaningful. And the toys came from Torah Cabin, right?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. The toys came from students who are at Torah Academy, but go to this shul.
Along the way, we actually did distribute a lot of letters from Torah Academy, from the shul, from other places to evacuees, to wounded soldiers, to serving soldiers. And part of the mission, obviously, was to try and provide support. And it is amazing to see how supported people in Israel felt by getting these letters. You think, oh, what difference does it make? Does a soldier really care about some kid who can barely write Hebrew the right way?
And
they read and you know, it definitely was very, very emotional. We went from there. We went to Maris HaMachpelah. We went to down at the where our patriarchs and our matriarchs are. We had the opportunity to hear from Ditza Or. Ditza Or has a son, Aminatan, who is a hostage, and she spoke in such an articulate fashion. It's really difficult to capture. But although there was a lot of competition, who would get to speak about this particular slot? I think Eitan Williams, since he's also representing Jermaine and Dario, we'll be allowed to speak about it.
They're all bigger than us, each of them. So as Rabbi Shvidman said, it's very hard to encapsulate Ditza Or. First of all, amazing woman. She drove from Shiloh to meet us in Hebron. At least an hour and a half. She's driving to meet us. That in itself was amazing. But for those who don't know about the background, she spoke a lot about her son. So her son, Avi Natan, is 30 years old. He's the second of seven brothers, religious family, and we all remember the very famous video of his girlfriend, Noa Argamani, a Chinese Israeli citizen, whose terminally ill mother, Leora, has one last wish, and her last wish is to see her daughter alive. That was one of the first videos that was released that unfortunately we saw, where Noah is taken on a motorcycle and she's saying "Don't kill me" to Hamas, and Avi Natan is looking on helplessly behind three terrorists as he's walking along with her. So that's a little background of them. But Ditza, she drove to meet us in Hebron. Of her son, she said, he's an amazing kid. He's 30, he's very tall, he's very strong, he's an amazing sportsman, an electronics engineer, a kid with a heart of gold. And even though he's so big and strong, he's always sensitive and helps even before he is asked. He's a friend like no one else with a great sense of humor. He's a great guy. Ditza believes that her son and everyone who was at the Supernova Festival actually saved, if not hundreds, but thousands more Israelis, because according, we've heard about some intelligence, not verified, but the Hamas was coordinating with Hezbollah and a couple of other terrorist groups to all attack at once. And according to Ditza, and from what she's heard, that Hamas, when they saw, they weren't expecting the people at the Supernova Festival. That was a surprise for them. When they saw that, it was like they couldn't help. They attacked right away, before coordinating with Hezbollah. And then, as we all know, Hezbollah didn't reciprocate. But she believes that because of the people at the festival, thousands more were saved from a coordinated attack from coming in from the north as well. I asked the mother What does she think about a peace deal? And amazingly, she said that holding negotiations with terror organizations equals surrendering to them. You know, we average people, we would do anything to get our kids back. We would sell ourselves to the devil. But she is one of is a mother standing steadfast. She said, we need to beat terror, not to speak with it, not to compromise with it, and not to give it a break from one round to the next so that they could rearm. She said, I love my son more than anything in the world, but I'm not willing for other children to pay with their lives in exchange for him. And then she concluded with the embrace that we are receiving from you coming to us to visit us in America and everyone in Israel really strengthens me. I keep it with me all the time, and we have a goal to make life here better and brighter, and we are at war against an evil which no one ever has imagined and will not give up. And she concluded with, we should all stay strong together. Am Yisrael Chai.
I think anybody who participated in this mission would agree with me that after day one, people were really tired. Physically and emotionally and spiritually, it was a very, very intense day. I think that we, as I'm looking at this, we skipped a really, really important part of our mission, what we did after Purim. So, okay, I'm gonna pass the microphone to Susan. But just to sort of capture the mood a little bit, the intent of the first day was really to try to experience as much as we could, so that we could understand and empathize, and ultimately provide support. The intensity, the pain, and the suffering. And the truth is that maybe the most difficult place that we went to, arguably, was where we went to after Urim, that we went to Be'eri. Be'eri was one of the most hard hit of all the settlements. I'm going to ask Susan to speak about what took place in this kibbutz.
So I would say that this was, I'm not used to speaking with a microphone. Okay, so hopefully you can all hear me. So this particular stop on the trip during this first day was perhaps for all of us, It other than we all have seen pictures from Be'eri, we've read about it in papers, we've seen video of it. We had a tour, a person who lives there from that community who met us and walked us through the area. And there was no, the being in the presence in that kibbutz, and which is blooming with flowers. And I'm a gardener. So for me to see all these beautiful flowers, and now this kibbutz is empty, they hope to return and rebuild it. But the evidence of the attack, lit incendiary powder being tossed into homes, then ignited with rubber tires while families are trapped inside their safe room, right? We've all heard this. The brutality was very real. And so we were invited into one family's home, and we actually all stood inside of their safe room, and the interior walls were completely marred with bullets. And this was a place where a 13-year-old girl attempted to save her mother, one of her brothers, and her father. Right? So of the four family members, two of those survived, and her two older brothers were not home that particular weekend. So this was, it was very difficult, but it was a very profound way to truly witness. We can feel disconnected in some way, even if we watch the videos or even some of the more horrific ones. We tend to step back from, we are safe. We are, it's not really happening to us. But there was a real, you could not escape the horror and the brutality of what had happened. So on my way out, as I said, I'm a gardener. And on various of these homes where someone was murdered, there are banners. And just as there are pictures of the hostages that we're all familiar with, there's a picture of each of the individuals who was murdered saying, in this house lived. And so I took this one picture. It's not a place where you want to take pictures very much. I took this one picture of a trellis, and there's this rose vine starting to grow and starting to flower, and behind it, there are the banners for the woman, Marina, and her husband, Igor, who were victims. And this was really, truly real. And I will stop, all right? So this was a place where the trauma happened, but you could feel throughout Israel and every place that we went that that Israel is traumatized to some degree. All of these people are dealing with something very real and very painful. They have tremendous courage, resilience, but there is a but. All right, so anyway.
That's okay. I think you've said it all.
Thanks. In any event, the first day, as you've heard, was exceptionally intense. By the end of the day, everyone was, I think, really overcome with a certain amount of emotion. The character of the second day was different. I would say that what we did on the second day, there were things that instilled us with pride and with hope and with opportunity, and we're going to hear about a number of those things. I think without any fair notice, but someone who seems to understand all that we've done, I'm going to ask Freddy. The first thing that we did was we went to the Knesset. And since you have a family connection to the Knesset, to speak about our experience at the Knesset. Bear with her, because she had no fair warning about this.
Fantastic. Okay. So we learned a little bit about the history of Israel and how the state was declared Erev Shabbos because they couldn't wait. If they had waited, then it would have been Hefker again, and then we could have lost the state. So it was done at 4 p.m. on an Erev Shabbos. We got to, on our way out, we saw buses coming in with young children, and something our tour guide shared with us is that in Israel, which is the only democracy in the Middle East, it's all about teaching the children about democracy, teaching everyone that they have a voice. We got to see the diversity of the Knesset members and how they get elected. And there was a lot of information.
I loved how when they walk into the building, each of the members, I think they have to sign in at the desk, and there's a panel with each person's name, and it lights up once you're in the building, so they know whether you're there.
The security guard presses a button when they
Is that
in.
It? Yeah.
And if they don't show up the 3 times a week that they have to, they lose part of their salary, so.
Yeah, he said he was a banker, and people were very careful to not lose their salary.
We also had the opportunity to hear from some Southern Knesset, including Sipa Rotman in particular, shared with us how right after the war started, all the Jewish members of the Knesset, Sipa Rotman members of the Knesset, created a WhatsApp group to try to deal with the biggest issues. And obviously, you talk about people who come from different parties and different values. And he said, not only did they really work together, but what was amazing is that there wasn't one leak. And he pointed to that as an example of how there's way more unity than people think there is. If you just look and see what's on the media, you get a sense of a tremendous amount of disparity. And yes, there are disagreements, but there is a lot of unity. There are people working together despite significant political differences. And it was certainly, I think, something that was an important reminder and message for us. We went from there to Leket. Leket is a very well-known organization, and they really do the fruit and vegetable packing to a high degree. And I'm going to ask Jackie to share with us a little bit about that.
I'd like to speak a little bit about Leket before I give it over to Jenny. She had the best picture there, honestly, with some celery. And you think celery is not very exciting, but when the celery is almost as like it was a huge amount of. I've never seen celery like that before. It was just incredible. And I think that the picture of Jackie holding said was on the video here. There are over 200 volunteers daily that come to Leket. That's for packing, and some people, 100 volunteers have been sent to over 20 farms to help with the harvest because they don't have the workers. They purchase tons of produce from farmers who can't export their crops. There's a gleaning initiative, and there have been over 60,000 meals to residents in the South that have been displaced, which is just really an incredible thing. We pulled the bus up and we walked in through the mud and went into the warehouse, had lunch, and then got to work. And in the hour and a half that we were there, we packed over, I think it was 4,400 pounds of food, over 400 boxes full of what on one of the conveyor belts. we were making the boxes, putting them on a conveyor belt, pushing it down to the next person who was putting in the potatoes, and then there were
carrots.
There were the carrots, and then there were the beets, and and it just went all the way to the end, and then there was a sealer, and it sealed, and it was. We really needed the activity because it was a really good way. We were all smiling at each other, and we were just so excited. And the way that our trip was scheduled, that had that in the middle, that was so amazing. Rabbi actually took the boxes that were already, there were boxes of food, of the produce, and when the produce was, when the box was empty, he was putting on a pallet, and we were all getting muddy. It was great. But the fact that we all were working together, and we were feeling so positive, and it was such a beautiful, beautiful experience.
On the other side of the warehouse, you had the conveyor belt. We had the big bins. They were big bins, taller than this, maybe this size, filled to the brim with the most amazing sized produce, like beets this big, and like you said, celery that this tall, and carting them up. It was like I think the cauliflower, right? And I think it was well timed to be able to give back and be productive, mm-hmm. and to help out.
Okay, moving right along. We went to Shalva, and as I said, at the right after this, Barry's going to provide us a little presentation about Shalva itself. Our sister community asked David to talk about Shalva, but I think sort of one aspect that we didn't really touch on so much, but when we left Beirut on our way and on our way to the Tivot, we went to see the place where they collected all of the birds' cars. And there was a lot that was powerful about them, not least of which is the fact that the army had to go through every single one of those cars to make sure they weren't booby-trapped. So they had to mark up each one of those cars, and to see a car where a person has a safer, there's a book, and the page that was open to was about how important it is for every Jew to live with simcha. It was a very, for me, a poignant moment. And Rindini talked about the respect for those who have passed away. And when the soldiers are buried, they're not buried in shrouds, they're not buried in tachbitim, because the halacha is, the din is, that a terrible thing happened. And to show that there's a kiddush Hashem, the sanctification of Hashem's name, and to, in a sense, to arouse the anger of Hashem against our enemies, we don't bury them in Tachrichim. We bury them as they are. And a further sign of respect is that all of these cars, and there are a lot of them, and it's horrific to see them riddled with bullet holes, and you can see places where the cars were almost dented with bruised bodies, that they're going to bury all of these cars. Because there may be some aspect of someone's life in those cars. And it speaks to the sensitivity of the memories of those people who are no longer with us. After Leket, which was definitely, I agree, it was so important for us to have that outlet, and it was intentionally scheduled. We went to Shalva, our sister city, and what David Dunkel were going to talk about it a little bit.
The Moshav of Shalva, which we are very proud to sponsor and to assist in any way possible, was founded in 1952 by primarily a group of Libyan immigrants and refugees from North Africa, leaving the Arab tensions of that time. And the community today, I believe, has roughly 600 people who are living there. And the name Shalva in Hebrew means security. And the name of the town actually comes from Tehillim 122, Pasuk number 7, Zion 7, where David HaMelech states, "I was glad when they told me where to go to the house of Hashem." And then later on in Pasuk 7, it states, "May you have peace within your walls and security within your citadels." So that's how the town was given its name by the people. And this was, for me, was the highlight of the week in a very positive way. It was a very, very enlightening joyful experience, probably one of the more joyful experiences of the entire trip. And I will never forget that time. We unload from the bus and we're greeted by these beautiful people who never met us before. They knew we were coming, but they just treated us like family immediately. There was an instant connection, and it was something that each of us will always treasure. To me, that atmosphere and that bond that we have with these beautiful people, inshallah, is really what we should all have from Jew to Jew to bring Mashiach. And I think this is really the message of Shabbat. This is the peace and the community that we need to have with each other. And going forward, the rest of that trip, we had dinner with him. They set up a nice table, and we had some snacks with the kids. There was popcorn. I think that was popcorn, wasn't it?
Crepes.
Various things that kids would love. Kids love to eat. And just talking to these people one-on-one was a beautiful experience. They were so proud of their town, and they showed us, gave us a private tour of the Beit Knesset, which was recently remodeled. And they also have a Beit Midrash, which was beautiful. A great collection of Sefarim. And then we go in for Mincha. It was that time of the afternoon. And I remember this vividly. Rabbi Schwindman is sitting in the next section next to me. I'm sitting on the right-hand side. And a man walks in behind us. And puts down a cup of black tea with a layer of peanuts in the bottom of the cup for both of us. I thought, wow, this is very, very interesting. And he said, drink. And I have to tell you, it's the best tea I've ever had in my life. It was spectacular. The peanuts and the black tea are a perfect mix. So please, try this at home. It really was delicious. But this is a traditional Libyan way to drink tea. So we're very grateful for that offer of generosity. And the hospitality we were shown was just amazing. Going on throughout the day, we met more people, had some more conversations, and we racked up with basically our social hall. They have a beautiful social room. They'd given us each a little, I guess it was a keychain with a Magen David, and it says LMS Shalva Connection. Which I actually use for special occasions, so very, very kind of them. But all in all, it was a spectacular visit, one that I will never forget. And just the beautiful people of Shabbat, we need support, and anything we can do for them, please do so. Oh, I'm sorry. I should wear the ark. In front of the Beit Knesset had, I believe, 26 Sefer Torah scrolls, all from Libya, all decorated with various flowers and other arrangements, and they were absolutely stunning. And they bring these out on Simchat Torah, and I believe they use the incense as well. So everyone has a nice, beautiful smell to them. There's a lot of yellow flying around the air when the incense comes out. So the scrolls were really quite amazing, nothing like that we've ever seen before.
They also gave us gifts.
Yeah. All right. This is one of the other things that we did. We tried in every place to do things, and we had activities for the kids, and we had all kinds of slushies and popcorns. We also had cotton candy. All right. Here's a little quiz for any non-Israeli. If you're Israeli, you can't answer this question. Does any non-Israeli in the room know how to say cotton candy in Hebrew? Yes, all right. The next time you have Sarot Safta at Elevest, you get a free one.
Grandma's hair.
Grandma's hair.
Yep. Sarot Safta means the hair of grandma. So grandma's hair. So
cotton candy.
Grandma has no hair, but I don't know. At some point, some movement somewhere is going to be oppositional to this. But Sarot Safta has to be high on my list of unbelievable Hebrew words. Up there with one last quiz question, as long as we're off topic, for non-Israelis. Anybody know how to say a ladybug in Hebrew?
Ooh.
A ladybug. Parot
Moshe Rabbeinu.
Anyway, so we did have a fantastic time in Shalva, and it really was a beautiful thing for us to connect with them and then to connect with us. And it really did speak to the idea of the ability to create a strong sense of family. We proceeded from there to Kisufim. Kisufim is an army base in the south, and I'm going to ask Dale to talk about our experiences in Kisufim.
It starts with a tug of war.
Yes, it does.
It was already dark out, and they say Gaza is 10 minutes that way. And you hear all kinds of boom, boom noise, and they say you don't have to worry about boom, boom noise unless you hear a siren. If you hear a siren, then you have to take precautions. So our first thing that we did in Kisufim was we helped them repair a tank. And we had our strong men with a big rope. They had to pull the tank so that the chain came off the wheels. They had to do something to get the chain back onto the wheels of the tank. So we had our big strong guys, the security guard with Rabbi Shimon. They helped to pull the tank back onto
In the video, you see Rabbi Schmidman having a tug of war with this tank, and I think that
guess who won.
Then we also had the privilege of graffitiing up the shovel part of a, Rabbi Shimon just thought it was called a canine tank. So it was a tank that had like a big, like a plow kind of shovel in the front, and we graffitied it with the LMS and Tahal on it, and we put stars and hearts, and with the red spray paint and white spray paint, we graffitied it up. We also got to go inside a leopard tank, and this particular tank had a lot of missile damage to it, and we were told that the soldier who was in the top looking out from the little hole, he suffered a lot of he got hurt by this, and the tank got hurt, he hurt too. But then we found out a few days later that he was in a coma, but we found out a few days later that he was discharged. So and we got to sit inside this tank, and just sitting in for a few minutes is like, you know, claustrophobic and all kinds of questions, like, what do they do for, you know?
We found out. We found out.
And then just to tell people that they're in these tanks for days on end, and after 2 minutes, we were like, get me out of here. And then after that, then we got to feed the soldiers. And these are young guys that were 18 years old, one even had braces on his teeth, that some didn't look like they shaved, that they were like little babies. And we fed them tons and tons of food that was barbecued there. And they ate it all up. And we got to share our letters and our cards that we brought with us with them. And then a whole van load went off into Gaza after they ate their dinner. We also saw a big tent there with beds in it, and that's where they get to rest when they go into Gaza for, I don't know, a week or two, and then they come out,
the next day,
and there's beds there for them to rest on. They also have porta-potties there, and nothing, everything is very, very rustic. That was that Kisufim.
Don't forget that.
Shifalim.
Dale is taking good notes. I actually want to ask Dale to show, at the beginning of the mission, we gave every person a sefer Tehillim so they should be able to stay on the bus and other times, but also Exhibit A, or Exhibit B, we were at Exhibit A, everybody got a pen and a notebook to be able to record their impressions, and certainly it was something that was helpful. It was amazing to see how much these Chayalim were so appreciative of us coming, and in a very bizarre way felt that we were doing more for them than the other way around. We were also, this community has been very, very generous in a lot of ways, has done a lot of things to help Israel and the Israeli army. One of the things that we have helped with is procuring drones, Rachfanim and Mazlatim, for the IDF. It's complicated why the army doesn't necessarily provide the necessary drones in all circumstances, but we're fighting the war and it's something that they need. And one of the fellows gave us a remarkable demonstration, because at the very beginning of the war, there were soldiers who were going into buildings, into houses that were booby trapped, and they were getting murdered, they were getting killed. And then they were using dogs. They have a special unit called Okets. And these dogs are trained, but unfortunately they were losing dogs as well, and which was horrible for them. And they have the ability with these drones to do an incredible amount of surveillance. And this Hayal, the soldier, showed us how with a drone, he took it and it goes underneath the table, and it takes, in real time, they have accurate data to really save people's lives. And they were so grateful to us for our support. So I just want to thank all of you, because really, it's all of you that makes this and many other things happen. And sort of to see it up close and live was definitely, I found it to be very powerful. And we had a DJ there playing Jewish music, and you saw the world of video dancing. And at the end, we davened Marv. We didn't have enough for a minyan. And there were some soldiers, including the commander, who was not religious. He took his hoodie and he participated. And the next day, he sent me a picture of him wearing tefillin. And since that day, he says he gets up super early because he's the commander. They had a special early minyan so that he could daven, and he davens every single day. Wow. So, kol to you. It's also one of the things that we've been trying to do is help to procure a child that sits us for soldiers. And trying to move along a little bit, the day number three, we started off the day hearing from Rabbi Dr. Yechiel Leiter. Rabbi Dr. Yechiel Leiter at one point had five sons and two sons-in-law serving in Gaza. And I know David wanted to share a little bit about what he had to say to us when he got the knock at 12:30 a.m. from soldiers, from the army.
Actually, that particular part of this is a discussion I don't have a great deal to say about. Only because I was focused on some other points that he had made during his conversation with us. But one thing I wanted to mention is that he went through a very methodical analysis of Israel and its enemies and our enemies, and came to a conclusion which I thought was very profound, and I actually saved it in my notepad, and I wanted to just share that with you, and I'll explain how this came to be. He was trying to explain how people view the world right now. There's good and there's evil. The evil has become good. Everything good has become evil, and everything is twisted around. Many people are falling prey to these misconceptions and the forces of media and everything that's being projected upon us to try to sway a particular agenda. But he came to the final analysis, and I thought it was brilliant, that when looking at the world, we only have two hemispheres. We have the Western alliances, which include the United States, Israel, and Israel, in his words, is the point squadron for the pro-American Western civilization morality, if you will. On the other hand, we have the Iranian regime, and Iran is the point squadron for the anti-American, anti-Western, anti-Israeli civilization, which represents everything that's evil in the world. And he said, these are the two forces that are opposing each other, and really it just comes down to these two halves, if you will, of the sphere. And I think if people contemplate on this and view this analysis as being truthful, which I believe it is, then we might be able to persuade some opinions, perhaps, maybe colleagues at work, friends or family members, to really think about what's going on in the world and to really take a side and say, yes, I see this. This is clear to me. I don't know why I'm believing on the other side or why I'm supporting the other side. It makes no sense. So I felt that was quite valuable information to share with us during that breakfast meeting. And then he, Dr. Leiter mentioned too that the enemy must be destroyed. Hamas has no reason to be in existence. And they are part of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood goes back many years and is really a foundation for everything that's been happening. He mentioned also that Sudan is controlled by the Muslim Brotherhood, and that is why Sudan keeps continuing to hope that Israel will win this war, because then everything is connected. So, I'm sorry about that. I didn't have...
it's okay. I'll fill it.
You can fill in some part. Thank you.
The hour is getting late. I'm going to try to get us to almost to the close of this last day of our mission. But in short, Rabbi Dr. Leiter, who was a tremendous scholar, Talmid Chacham, brilliant thinker, author, as I said, has five sons, two sons-in-law in the army, and he gets a knock Friday night at the door at 12:30 a.m., and everyone in Israel, unfortunately, knows what it means. And his first reaction is, who is it? Which one? That's what he's thinking. And his son, Moshe, who was a medical doctor, father of six, was a commander in Shaldad. Shaldad is one of the most elite, it's a Navy SEAL unit. This is a man who was a commander for many years, about 20 years, who had been overseas on behalf of Israel. And when they send people on those kinds of missions, let's just say they're very dangerous. He talked about the love that he has for his son and the efforts to perpetuate his memory, but at least the solace in knowing that his son was part of something greater and that his life was given for the service of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael was very, very profound. We went from there to Tel HaShomer to visit with soldiers who were wounded. These are soldiers, it's not like they had a broken wrist. These are very, very serious injuries. And there's really a lot, I could talk for a long time about this, the hour is late, but the sense of hope that these chayalim exhibit is remarkable. We saw a man discharged, he was been there for close to 4 months, for 6 weeks he couldn't walk. And he said, "I'm in a." They said, "You know what? You're well enough. You can be discharged." He still had a walker, but he's two canes. But he said, "I'm in a rush to get out of here." This man who's 50 years old. He's a grandfather. And he said, "Why are you in such a rush?" He says, "Because I have to get back to my unit. It's not fair that they're serving and I'm not." And that really speaks of the attitude that just about everybody that we saw there. It was definitely a very powerful experience. We went from there to the Leonardo Hotel in it's just over the line in East Jerusalem to spend some time with some elderly evacuees, and we made mugs together with them and to speak with these people who their whole lives were overturned. It's incredibly painful, but nonetheless the people overall were very, very strong and looking forward to. Continuing, we concluded the day by, and this will end the presentation, we went to what's called Mereshet HaKotel. And to give you a description of what it is, where it is, and what occurred there, I'm going to ask Michelle to describe it, and with that we will conclude the presentation to be followed by Barry's presentation. Michelle.
So we've all had the privilege of davening at the Kotel and being up close in front, right in the front there. Mereshet HaKotel is set back, like where the Eish HaTorah building is. So it's a building that we climbed up to the top, and on the landing there, it has the most awe-inspiring vision of the whole Kotel. You see the Dome of the Rock. It's all from a different perspective than you ever see it up close. It just takes your breath away. As we came to the hotel to daven and we were in the plaza, we saw many, many chayalim, and we just realized there was going to be a big tekes there. So it was not planned as part of our trip, but it was just a real bonus and very, very moving. There were, and I've been before when there's been a tekes of, one small troop or a couple of troops There were hundreds, and we had it on the video.
This was the Givati Reconnaissance Unit, their first graduation since October 7th.
So they had the swearing in of what was hundreds of soldiers, and to watch them, the commander address them all and gave them their charge, and then each one got a rifle and got what we think was a sitter of it.
Tanakh.
And it was just beautiful to watch. We couldn't pull ourselves away from it. Then we were treated to a tour of some excavations down below in that same building. Excavations that aren't yet open to the public, but somehow Rabbi Schnittman arranged for us to get in and see them. And then we had one final get-together where we all shared our feelings, what was most inspiring, and you know, it was very hard to decide what on this trip was the most inspiring, because it was all so special, so inspiring. And I think it gave us all a very strong feeling of unity and connection that, as much as any of us had before, went above and beyond. And it was just a very, very special trip. And thank you to the Schmidmans for leading it and arranging it. And it was very beautiful.
Thank you all very, very much to all of our presenters. I'm going to call Barry, but I just want to point out that I have to admit, this went longer than I thought it was going to go, but it's a reflection of that there's so much emotion from this trip. It's really difficult to be brief, and at least I did say it with the OST. So thank you for bearing with us as we share with you some of our thoughts and experiences. And hopefully we can share happy ones. And one of the happy things certainly is this idea that we're gonna continue our relationship with Shalva. And so I think those of us on the platform here are gonna walk away before we get blinded. And I understand it's, what, 8 minutes, Barry?
If you made it through the end, wow, thank you. And apologies for the sound quality. This is just out there for all the people who have been asking for more information. And it was so special, so I wanted to collect what I had, the bits and pieces, and share it with you. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Have a great week.